Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We have approximately 35 people live in the hall. And how many people are online?
92.
And there are 92 online. A nice gathering on this Sunday morning. You know, the original cause of why we're here is symbolized by the man behind me. So why do we offer incense, beautiful smells, to the Buddha? Because if in the historical dimension, if he had not existed and done what he did in his own spiritual journey and woken up and then taught for nearly 50 years, we would not be here. So that's one good reason to honor him. The other reason is that he identified clearly the awakened state. He awakened clearly, I mean, he identified clearly to all of us what had happened to him, what he had discovered in his great enlightenment, that he had discovered this pure, undefiled, uncontaminated, birthless, deathless, beyond all characteristics, mind. Awareness. And lo and behold, he said, it's not unique to me. Everyone has it. Every being. No matter small or tall or man or woman, you know, it doesn't matter. Rich, poor. It's not about any of those characteristics. It's the very nature of our own mind. And so we honor that too. We honor that Buddha mind, that awakened mind in all of us. And all the teachings of the Buddha, all the practices of Buddhism, of which there are, we say there are 84,000 Dharma doors. All of them are wanting to lead us home to our true nature, our true mind. So in our community, Florida Community Mindfulness, you know we have these three paths. This developmental model of practice based on the Buddhist teachings. We have our mindful living path, which is sort of taking this traditional meditative part of the meditative path of mindfulness, and it's been turned into something that's kind of very therapeutically helpful for people like us because we live in a world we are so distractible. We are so lost in our thoughts that, you know, we don't, that there is a reality, you know, that's always present to us. You know, we don't even notice. So mindfulness is very essential for us to kind of get a ground, get present, get out of our heads, okay? So we teach mindful living. We teach the path of mindful living. And as also we teach in the mindful living path, the importance of emotional healing, because we are also a people that carry, for one reason or another, not that I think we have more woundings than anybody in the past, but for some reason we carry them, you know, year after year, decade after decade, and they are still, even when we come to Dharma, they're still very activated for many of us. And they will disturb our ability to develop on the path. So we also include emotional healing, emotional intelligence, right? As kind of the first path. And then the second path, of course, is learning the Dharma, learning all the wonderful teachings of Dharma about life, about ourselves, about our minds, about thoughts, or about stages of mind, about afflictive emotions and wholesome emotions, about our capacities, you know, to learn how to love and to be kind, be patient. I mean, there's lots that we learn. Cause and effect, about impermanence, you know. There are many things in the Dharma path that we learn. So we change our view. Things that we, the world that we thought was permanent, we realize is impermanent. The self that we thought was me, we realize is really not a me. You know, you understand, you know, all these, the whole way we've lived life, always seeking permanence, always seeking pleasure, always seeking happiness in things, we find out why it doesn't work, even though we try hard. So we learn about all these things, right? So it's very helpful to learn the Dharma and to kind of change our view of things so we can, you know, stop stumbling about in life, sort of live again intelligently, wisely, helpfully, to ourselves, to our families, to all beings, colleagues, right? So that's the Dharma path, really. It's kind of like big, right? And so just practicing the mindful living path and practicing the Dharma path, and again, in our community, we have, you know, weekly meditations, we have intensives, we have classes, we have workshops, right? Lots of ways that we can learn. I once heard the Dalai Lama describe, he said, Buddhism is an educational system. You know, he said, Buddhism is something, you know, we're learning finally about how to live, right? So then we have our wisdom path. And the wisdom path is that part of Buddhism that is not practiced by everyone. Actually, the wisdom path, just in traditional Buddhism, as it's come to us from Asia, is probably practiced by the fewest Buddhists. But it's really only for those people who say, yeah, I want it to go beyond mere conceptual understanding, which again is very helpful. It's good to, you know, have clear thinking. It's good to think clearly. It's good to see things as they really are, right? So, I mean, changing our thinking is very much part of the path. But you see, we're curious about the Buddha's enlightenment. You see? He said, each of us, no matter what's occurred in our life, have right now this essential, pure, undefiled nature. In it, everything is complete. Everything is at ease. So some people might say, yeah, just knowing that, you know, it's been very helpful, right? Because I stop identifying myself. Many people identify themselves as, you know, less sin, or something's wrong with me, or, you know, bad, or, you know what I mean? We have all kinds of identifications with ourselves. But to hear the Buddha's teaching say, no, you know, essentially all beings are Buddha. All beings have this awakened nature. All beings have this great capacity, you know, for knowing things just as they are, for great openness and spaciousness and clarity. And you don't have to get it. It's already here. And many of us will go, well, and how come I don't know it? I don't, if it's right here, right? I mean, sort of an obvious question, right? Why don't I know it? Right? You know, why do I live like a pauper, when actually I'm a multi-billionaire? Why am I still living like a pauper? Right? We live in a monetized society, so I guess that one, that's why that one came up. So in our community, the third path is the wisdom path. And in the wisdom path, because it's really now focused directly on the mind itself, because it is the mind itself that is the source of our happiness and unhappiness. Everything arises in mind. Thoughts arise in mind, ideas arise in mind, memories arise in mind, our woundings arise in mind, the things we see, the things we smell, the things we touch. I mean, everything is mind. And our mind is experiencing everything. Well, obviously then, if the mind is the source of all my happiness or my suffering, is the source of awakening and delusion, then I need to understand the nature of this mind, and I need to find my true nature here. So traditionally in the wisdom path, retreat, individual retreat, group retreat is essential. Because we need this space, we need this time where we can step back from all the stimulation and all the activity and just focus in a very concentrated way on our minds itself. Okay? Now, another momentous thing has happened. It's over there, right? So I think a couple of weeks ago, I announced to the community that after a very difficult gestation period, a very difficult pregnancy that went on for years, a very difficult birth, Great Cloud was finally completed. And, you know, the paint wasn't even dry before we started moving in because we had a retreat coming up, began last Saturday. And you know, the retreat ended yesterday, began a week ago Saturday. It ended yesterday, everything worked. The baby's good. It was quite a wonderful moment, you know what I'm saying? We had a wisdom retreat. We kept it to 30 people. We limited, because we, you know, this was sort of our shakedown cruise. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, who knows how it was going to go. I mean, everything, not just having a residency, but the food and, you know, just the whole bathroom, you know, the whole thing. So the people who came to the wisdom retreat were all experienced practitioners. So this is all by way of introduction. What I want to do is call up 4 people, right? You know who you are, please come up, who are on retreat, to share with the community their experience. So it's kind of a demystified process. So I've asked each of you to speak 5 or 10 minutes. And I've asked Angie, who was, she was on the bell, she was head of the meditation hall, to give kind of a general overview of specifically this retreat, how it's scheduled, teaching, just kind of as if you were there. And then I've asked 3 different participants, members who are on retreat, to share their experience, their perspective. And I've tried to pick different people. I mean, there are different people, but just for different perspectives. So I chose Nancy Nadelson, a long-term member, but had not been on retreat with us for several years. So I thought, you know, this would be interesting to see her perspective of now going on retreat again, and also, you know, again here for the first time at Great Cloud within our own retreat center. Way over there on the left, I asked Dana. Dana is a younger member and also in the Dharma Transmission Group, who had never been on a retreat quite like this. Wanted to hear her experience. And then I asked Paul Schneider, who's a recent member. You've only been a member for a year. But I asked Paul because Paul has experience in other meditative traditions. He's been on lots of retreats in other traditions. So I thought he would have a unique perspective on this retreat here. So that's the deal. So if we can begin with Angie. And I may, at some point, as the moderator, just ask a question, but otherwise, I may just be silent.
Good morning. So, retreat is an interesting experience, and Fred asked me to talk a little bit about kind of the schedule and the flow, but I wanted to offer that everything about the schedule, everything about the food, everything about the facility has really, before retreat even started, been really considered very deeply by our teacher and those who help him with a lot of love to, you know, what supports the retreat experience. So before we formally began at 4 p.m. at registration time Saturday a week ago, there were so many members on campus, I can't tell you, helping to lovingly put up shower curtains, get beds and linens done, prepare food in so many ways. And so there was so much love and energy that went into just creating this container that at 4 o'clock on Saturday, 30 people came onto campus and, you know, there was already an energy there, I would say, for retreat. People arrive very excited, happy to see each other, particularly after a year plus of COVID. People having been fully vaccinated, a lot of hugs, tears, just a lot of greetings, and a lot of energy that moves right into traditionally our first dinner on the first evening, which some may call a gab fest. Before we go into silence, there's a lot of talking and happy, you know, just connecting with people who are new, people who have been friends for a while, and so forth. So people are settled into retreat. They're kind of getting the feel of, you know, where am I going to sit in the hall? They're in their rooms in Great Cloud or elsewhere for the first time. And then kind of, you know, slowly starting to settle in as we come into the hall around 7 for our first meditation. And traditionally, the first evening, Fred's giving an overview of retreat, but also he does an orientation. And an important part of the orientation, whether it's a wisdom retreat or Dharma path or mindful living, is constructing boundaries, because we've come in and oftentimes our events of our day are in our head, or we're wondering what's going to happen. We're thinking about, you know, what's this experience going to be like? And so Fred always says, you know, forget the, like he did in meditation this morning, you know, let go of thinking about the past, erect these boundaries so that during retreat, this time that goes very rapidly, you will be present and you will be practicing. It's a rare opportunity to put everything down. And so with that, another guidance from Fred, we go into noble silence the first evening. Lots of bells at retreat that guide us to wake up at 6 a.m. to come to the hall and to move about throughout the day. And so every morning in retreat, someone's inviting the gong and we're awakening and just basically coming to the hall. We just follow the bells and we come to the hall. And this retreat is a little different than some retreats. We actually, rather than having a Dharma talk in the morning, we had practice periods. So there were 4 practice periods throughout the day. And each practice period, we'd come and we'd sit. And as Fred said, this retreat was all about, you know, knowing this natural mind. So there was a lot of emphasis by Fred in our meditation on just relaxing, resting, you know, as he started to guide us this morning, just letting it go. And then Fred would give instructions. Fred gave teachings from Shubkar's Flight of the Garuda, which is a wonderful, wonderful text. And we all had copies of that. And the text itself, very beautifully written, but as many people observed, you know, without the commentary from our teacher to really show us how to practice, it would have been a very different experience. So typically in the practice periods, Fred taught, he led us through how to practice. There are a lot of practice instructions in this piece by Shubkar. And then we practiced. And then we went off around campus, wherever, to do our own practice. So that was an important part of this retreat, was hearing the teachings, reflecting on the teachings, but then going off, as others will describe, to really look for ourselves, to really gain experience with the teachings. And it was fun because it was our first residential retreat to see where people went. I know when we first talked about building the center, I thought, oh, so used to going to Southern Dharma in the mountains in the summertime, and it's cool. What's it going to be like to do retreats in Tampa in June and the heat? It was wonderful. People really loved it. And we learned that there's so many beautiful places, whether people would go to the Lotus Hall, we have a blue room upstairs. Oh, the Lotus Hall is a smaller meditation hall in our education building that is very kind of dark and cool. It felt like a cool cave for a lot of people to practice in. We have a blue room in the attic where people discovered it was a wonderful place as well to practice. There's a sky room up near the top of Great Cloud. There are solitude rooms. You know, people were on porches. There's just space everywhere for practice. So we learned that this was just a wonderful place. So then we would come back. Every morning after the first session, we would then have breakfast. And Nancy can talk a little more about that. It was wonderful, you know, silent meals, everything's in silence. And then we had work meditation. And just as so many selfless service hands helped create the facility, all of us on retreat, all 30 of us, really, we, with the help of some wonderful selfless service people who weren't on retreat, you know, we basically took care of our home during retreat. We cooked, we cleaned, we did bathrooms, we swept, whatever needed to be done. And again, that's a practice. Everything on the schedule is meant to be a practice. It's a practice in just being present to whatever is before us, not striving to get something done, but just taking the practices and the clear seeing of mind into some activity, all intended to kind of support us in deepening this practice. We'd come back for another session, have lunch and a rest period. Then we came back to the hall for some mindful movements, which was wonderful to begin to, you know, sitting a lot for 7 days. Mindful movements were very helpful to support our bodies. Another practice period. And then we would come back for deep sharing. And deep sharing, which a number of you may have experienced, was just an opportunity to speak from our hearts about what was coming up, whether it was challenges, difficulties, insights, and for others to just simply be present and listen. And then we had a chanting service, which was also wonderful because over the past year and a half, although we've had online retreats, we haven't done chanting because you would have just heard, the people on Zoom would have had to hear our voices in the hall, which were not exactly a choir sometimes. So we decided to dispense with that over the past year. But here we were again, our voices joining, singing, you know, chanting the Heart Sutra, verses on trust and mind, and just really supported by that. We had dinner and then came back again in the evening for practice. And the schedule went like that for a number of days, but the last few days of retreat, Fred really opened up significant amounts of time during the day for solitary practice. And by that time, we had heard the instructions and really taken them in deeply, and people had the opportunity to really incorporate this and practice in a way that was meaningful for them. So I think I've probably covered it all, but it was wonderful.
Good morning. I think I'd like to begin again talking about Great Cloud. As an old timer, I've been on retreat with FCM, a residential retreat, not only at Southern Dharma in the mountains, which Angie referred to, but we used to go to the Franciscan Center on the Hillsborough River, which was also, you know, a lovely, beautiful place because it was right on the river. And even before that, we went to a place called Chinsegut near Brooksville that was this old beautiful house with the wraparound porch kind of in the middle of nowhere, and that too had wonderful nature. So when Fred had this vision of having the retreat center here, you know, many of us were quite skeptical, you know, in the middle, you know, off of Nebraska Avenue, and the noise and the, you know, the neighbors, and some of us live in Seminole Heights, and I thought, you know, why would I want to sleep here when I could go home a mile away and be in the comfort of my own bed? And the last retreat I was on was actually in February of 2020, right before COVID. We had a non-residential retreat here, which was also very lovely. But we did go to our homes because Great Cloud wasn't done. And we had people staying in our homes, many of us. So it was, you know, it was quite wonderful. We had our meals here. You know, it worked. It was nice. But I'll be honest with you, being here this past week, I just got shivers. It was really, really, really special to be on retreat with our brothers and sisters at our own home. Was just so full of love and emotion and peace and harmony. It was just beautiful. It was really beautiful. And so all of those doubtful ideas just vanished. And Fred's vision came true, and it's just perfect. And all the hard work that so many people have done, I won't mention names because I know I'll miss them, but it's just, it's alive because it's ours and we built it. And it's not a possessive thing. It's just our hearts are in it, and it's just so special. So thank you. So it was quite an honor to be on the inaugural retreat. And I was asked to cook the food, which I have done in the past and enjoy doing. And Angie mentioned work meditation, but also before the retreat began, I had some wonderful volunteers who are here in the room help me prepare ahead of time. The kitchen needed to be cleaned because it hadn't been used in a long time, so it wasn't quite ready. So I did some cooking at our home and brought it to the refrigerator here because our refrigerator at home doesn't hold big pots. Anyways, there was a lot of preparation, but I had a lot of help, and it was really quite wonderful and a lot of fun because I do enjoy cooking. So then we had a lot of the food prepared ahead of time and frozen because I was a retreatant too, and I was worried, frankly, that I couldn't benefit fully from the retreat and be in charge of all the meals. But I'll tell you a secret, it kind of worked. So anyhow, lots of help and support. And then during work meditation, there were three people assigned just to help me in the kitchen, chop and dice. And the kitchen is our meditation hall when we're in the kitchen. And so we bow when we enter the kitchen. It's a sacred place where we practice. And, you know, it takes some getting used to. I probably bowed more times this last week than I have in my life and washed my hands more times. But it becomes habitual in a beautiful way. You stop before you enter the kitchen and really think about what you're about to do and how you're serving people so lovingly. So we had the work meditation we invite a bell and say a gata before we begin. And a few times as people are chopping a little too quickly, I would invite the bell again and we would stop and we would breathe and we would look at those thoughts that we were taught to investigate and just experience being. Not doing. We would just stop, and it's wonderful. I recommend we carry that practice throughout our lives. Just, it can be brief, and you don't have to make it dramatic so that people, you know, wonder what you're doing. Just breathe. Just stop and breathe and pause. It's really quite wonderful, and come back to just being and being alive in this present moment. So we did that several times. We accomplished what we could. And I had a great kitchen crew, so we did a lot. And then work meditation was over, and we came back into the practice session. And I left every practice session about 15 minutes early just to heat things up so that they would be ready as soon as the practice session ended. And I will admit that much of my thinking and practice during the retreat centered around food because, you know, I had the responsibility, the joyful responsibility of being sure the food was ready on time and that there was enough and that it was delicious and nutritious and all those things. But I was able to practice. That was my practice. So I could look at those thoughts. I could look at those preferences that came up. I wish we had this kitchen utensil, or I wish we had some of the pretty platters I have at home. And, you know, all that came up. And I would look and see where, you know, where is that coming from? And does it really matter? And is that creating unhappiness in me because it's not the way things are? And it was a wonderful practice, and I was able to let go of a lot and really appreciate what we did have, and then rest in just being in this wonderful place with these supportive, loving people. So it was really quite a joyful time cooking for everybody, and it felt like just such an honor. And really, everybody was so dependable. Everybody who came to wash the dishes, who came to empty the dishwasher, who came to set up the table, who brought some food in. We had some non-retreatants who also helped, several of whom are here today. And, you know, I was thinking, oh, is the food going to be ready for them? And, you know, are they going to, you know, get in traffic jam coming here? And what happens if I go downstairs before the meal and nothing's on the table? But you know what? I let those thoughts go, and everything was just perfect as it unfolded, and life can be that way if we allow it to be, if we step back and let that happen. So, to conclude, I just want to say that I still feel like I'm on retreat, and I think that's the magic of going on retreat, is that when you leave, you don't leave it there and go home and wait until you're on retreat again. You take it with you, and you really practice as much as you can every instant, according to Petrol Rinpoche, that poster over there. But you know, life is full of challenges. I'm very engaged with the world around us and wanting to help benefit as many people as I can. But we all know, we've been taught that it starts here. And being on retreat, as Fred said, allows the space for us to get back in touch with that open heart, that Buddha nature, that wonderful spacious luminosity that we all have inside of us, and that we can carry with us and use it to benefit others. So thank you for letting me share.
So, that's okay. I'm I have papal dispensation. Yeah, so Dana again. Dana is So Dana's. You've been a member how long, Dana? About four or five years. Was here in Tampa and is part of our Dharma Transmission Group, our 3-year Dharma Transmission Group. And this was a new kind of experience for you, being on this kind of retreat, these kind of teachings. So just share your experience.
I don't know how to share all that experience. I'm just gonna start talking. Yeah, I think before I came to this retreat, I would create a lot of obstacles for myself about everything, like literally just about everything. I just like create a bunch of obstacles, like I can't practice as much as I need to, I can't study as much, my mind is too this. I can't practice if I'm working. I can't work and practice. If I could just, you know, figure out how not to work, and then I could have enough time to practice. Maybe I should just become a nun. That's not why I cut my hair off. But I was just like, I'd create all this stuff. And Fred knows I can be really rebellious too. And I'd like be like, oh, I'm coming up on so much resistance. It's just in my mind. And so I made a commitment, an intention for the retreat to just be open, like, just like soak it all up, just practice to the letter, not Dana's way, just like, just do whatever he says and do whatever all the people who know better than you say, just do it. And like, don't fight it. And it works. Yeah. So I guess to narrativize it, it just like they said, you basically, I just practiced looking at everything, every single thing that popped into my mind, like everything, even if I thought it was like really important and true and insightful, it was just like, where did that come from? And I think I was making a mistakes at first. I've heard these teachings before. It's not like I haven't heard it. You know, Brian's told me, Fred's told me, a whole bunch of people, yeah, just look, is there anything there? And I would look, but it was like I was imagining a space inside my mind that was like, am I moving this around too much? Can you all hear me? Okay. And then I would look, and I'd like look inside this tiny little space, and I'd be like, I don't see anything. But Fred said, well, you know, everybody's like, there's a spacious, luminous mind. And I was just like, well, I don't know where that is because I've never felt that way. I don't know what that, it doesn't feel spacious. It's like, and so he was like, well, look for the edges of your mind. Like, can you find the edge? And there was like this turning point. I went up into the blue room, which I had never been in. So cool, so awesome. And I went in there and I sat and I looked at the wall. I was sitting there with a whole bunch of people and I was like, I'm gonna find the edge of my mind. Because apparently I think it's there. So I'm just, and it was like the first time I had really like in earnest looked, not just like, oh no, I don't see anything. Okay, cool. It was like, I was going, I was like, I'm gonna find it. And I like looked all around and like, I just could not find a thing. And then I rested and like, it was just like, oh, it's just that. And there's not edges of my mind. It's just like, I'm experiencing all the time. Like, and I miss it. I just like miss it all the time because I'm like caught in these like problems I make for myself. And I think they're true. Yeah. And so it's practicing with that. And I remember going down to an interview with Fred. I don't know what day it was. Time got really weird. It was just like, I didn't notice that a week had gone by. It was just like doing stuff. And I went down to an interview with Fred and I was telling him like, you know how Fred always says that thing? He'll just be talking and he'll be like, yeah, look, I don't even, how am I doing this? I'm just drinking tea. And I've always thought that was so silly. I was like, what do you mean? Like, you know you're drinking tea. You know how you're drinking tea. Why would you, you know, and I like, but I was walking and I was like watching and I was just like, oh my God, who's doing this? Like, who's walking right now? Who is it? And I'm like walking and it's not like I just like had this realization, like I'm not thinking to myself, Dana, put your foot, do that. I'm just like doing it. And I like finally got it that he wasn't just being silly. Like, sorry. But I told him that, and then I was like, yeah, it's like I'm watching a movie. And he's like, yeah, but don't just be like, I'm watching a movie, like, oh, look at Dana doing those things all on her own. He's like, you gotta come into it and like, it's alive. It's like, it's all here. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay. So I practiced with that. And it felt like, I don't know how to, it was just like, I just like came right into my body. And then it was like, all there. It was just like, and I feel like after I did whatever that was that he said, it just got a lot easier. It just felt like, I remember sitting in the, what are they called? Solitude rooms? The solitude room. And it's just like this room with one lounge chair, basically, like a chaise lounge. And it looks over the garden. And I was sitting there and I just felt like, God, I could sit here forever. But I didn't think that. It was just like, I just kept sitting. Just like I didn't, you know, normally before this, it's like, is it over yet? When's the bell coming? Like, but it was just like, oh, I can just relax into this. Like they say in the song, how amazing that you can just rest and relax. Like, that's the whole instruction. And I've been trying to do everything. I've been trying to do meditating. I've been trying to do it right and do it perfectly and do, and it's just like, stop. Yeah. And I also realized I had a misperception about what Fred said, or, you know, he kept saying, we have all have Buddha mind. That's what the Buddha said. It's in everybody. And I'm like reading that and I'm like, that's really nice. That's a really nice thing to think. It's better than being a sinful whatever at birth. Like it's yeah, I'm a Buddha, okay. But like, it is true. Like, it's not like they're just like saying those nice things so that people will want to do Buddhism. It's like, it's our mind. So cool. I want to tell everybody. Has it been 10 minutes? Okay. I just trust Fred. Don't fight with him. I fought with him. Don't do it. Just trust the teachings. Trust Fred. Trust yourself.
Thank you. So now Paul, and again, as I said, Paul's a bit of trust. So again, Paul's been a member for a year, but he has how many years of experience in Buddhism? 28 years of experience. You've been on how many retreats? 20 more or less. These are like overnight retreats, more than a night?
7 to 10 days.
7 to 10 day retreats. You've had different teachers?
Yes.
I don't know his history that well. So you've had several teachers, and you've practiced in a couple of different Buddhist traditions, or?
Mostly like Vipassana.
Okay.
Theravada.
Okay, mostly Vipassana and Theravada. Just hold it up to your mouth. Okay, so then, you know, Paul shows up and he goes to your first 7 day residential retreat with us.
Yes.
Okay. That's way by introduction. Now, Paul, what was your experience like?
Well, I think partly people can see partly what the experience is like, but just by listening to these people, because every day we would spend, almost an hour sharing, and you could share or not share. It wasn't required, but many people shared, you know, very similar things to what everybody said here. And you can just imagine, aside from all the teachings and all our practice, just benefiting like so deeply from everything else that people shared, that alone was worth the price of admission. I mean, just by itself. And of course, there was so much more beyond that.
Another retreats you've been on, there isn't this deep lifting, deep sharing in the context.
No, usually there was, there was some small group sharing, mm-hmm. but it was just more constricted, much more constricted. Not the whole group.
Okay.
Altogether. at these other retreats I would go on, at the end of the retreat, they would make a big deal about, now we're stopping, now we're ending silence, and we need to mindfully relearn how to speak with each other, which wasn't a bad idea, but no one mentioned that on this retreat, because we did have that session every day, and so it just wasn't a question of like, well, how am I going to go back to speaking? Not that any of us have any trouble speaking anyway, but anyway, okay. But just briefly, in terms of my past experiences, I want to just briefly try to weave together thoughts about a teacher and about practice in the Dharma and about Sangha, the community. So I've been practicing, going to retreats and practicing on my own and in little sanghas that would come together. And I've spent most of this time back and forth between the New Jersey and here, but more time up in New Jersey. And a lot of my practice was like concentration meditation, tranquility meditation, which is a sensible place for all of us to start, and that's probably where we all start, because you've got to just quiet the mind some before you can start to look at it and start to think about things. But I guess this is a good time to throw in that Lois and I, my wife Lois and I, were here in 2007, and we were looking for a place to practice, and somewhere online Lois saw that Fred was having meditation at the Lotus Room in Tampa, a yoga studio, and she said he was rated on Yelp, it was a 4.9. So I said, that sounds pretty good. I wonder who didn't give him a 5. But never found that person. But we went. We just got to go twice then. But we knew we had encountered something really special. We really did. This was way before the center, of course. So I always thought, if and when I can ever get down here for more time or live here permanently, I've got to get back to that teacher and that Sangha. And so that started happening a little more over time. And in 2015, I came here by then this building looked like it does now. And, you know, I didn't experience any of that, but I'm certainly grateful that it's happened. I came and Fred, it was a day-long retreat, that Fred focused on Banki, a Japanese Zen master from the 1600s. And his teaching, and I was so taken by it, I got the book. And because that's what we do, right? We get the book. So I read the book. And the book, I mean, he says 500 times, just rest in your unborn Buddha nature. Just rest. You know, and his talks are really, you know, like, I told you people, what's the matter? If you'd only listen to me, just rest in your unborn Buddha nature. I mean, that's how he speaks. And I was like, how do you do that? You know, like, easy for you to say, but tell me, you know, but he didn't tell. It doesn't say in the book. So it actually turned out, so as time went on, you know, I realized I need a teacher. I need a, because in the practices I was doing, you were very much on your own, and you figure it out. You just take enough time, might be many lifetimes, but you take your time and you figure it out. And that's not entirely what the practice was like, but it was a lot like that. And I kind of started thinking like, well, after 20 years, if that's going to hold water, I need to see like a little more progress than I've seen in my life. So I started having the ideas more strongly that I need a teacher. And I first, you know, still I was up north, and it was before COVID when everything was available on Zoom. So I was with what I had available up north. And I did seek out teachers, but it's just a tradition where teaching is not, it's not featured that much. And it occurred to me that, because what I want to say is that I had experienced more than once my unborn Buddha nature, but it's like if you're driving on the highway and your exit's coming up and no one tells you that's your exit, you just keep going. It's just a natural thing to do. And that's kind of the situation I was in. I didn't have any GPS. I didn't have someone sitting next to me. So, you know, all this came together and I realized I need a teacher to help me along. And, you know, luckily that coincided with spending more and more time in this area and having the opportunity. And then, you know, this is when the pandemic happened last year. So everything was strictly online. So there wasn't that much else to do. So like a great opportunity. You know, I got to know Fred a little better and got to spend time with him. And you know, it was everything for Fred to say, that was your exit. You just passed. That's your unborn Buddha nature. And I mean that, you know, if you go past your exit, you're never going to get to where you want to go. So that was like a huge for me. And then, the other thing I do want to say that this all goes very much together. You know, we've always felt strongly that we want community. You know, not everybody values community, but it's something Lois and I really share, that we really value community, and it's not easy to find. And you know, we kind of knew that from early on, that this is a community, a sangha that's unlike any other. It really is. And I can't say that it's unlike any other, but it's like really special. And, you know, I did a lot of 20 retreats, right? You come together for a week, you feel like a sangha, you are a sangha in a certain sense, but then poof, you disperse and it's mostly gone. It's mostly gone. But this, to be here in this experience for this last week and know that like I can come tomorrow and be in the sangha and be here and next week, you know, to the extent that any of us know if we're going to be here next week, but we work on that assumption, and a year from now and whatever, you know, it's so precious. I mean, you know, we learn about a precious human existence and how lucky we are, but it's all the more true for a precious sangha like this. And I'll just say, I mean, Dana spoke very, very well about the practice we did, and it's...
It's your own experience.
Okay. My own experience of retreat. Okay. Well, and fortunately, I'm doing one of the intensives that's going on, the Wisdom Intensive, so of course it goes together very well to be doing that and be able to come on this retreat at the same time. And, you know, not to trivialize it in any way, but the practice is such a useful tool. It's like the most important set of tools you could have in living life, of how do I look at life? How do I experience what's going on? What does it mean? Where does it come from? To really get, and a big part of the practice is you look, you know, we always say, yeah, I know, but how often do we look? So often we don't look, we just assume we know something, but that's just the story in our head. Because when you really look, you see a lot more of what's there and what's not there. And it makes all the difference. It makes all the difference. So this was an intensive time of practicing that looking in a lot of different shades and ways. And, you know, the text was great. The Fred's guidance was just wonderful. And everybody worked at it in a good, relaxed way. That's about all I can say.
Sorry, I just want to
It is here too. Because what struck me at the, and I think Nancy alluded a little bit to it, is we don't have a staff here, do we? I mean, we have a community. We rely on a community. We don't rely on a staff, which I think is very unique. And it does promote community to, for people to feel involved. So I think, you know, this was sort of our learning curve on this retreat. And I think one of the things that made it work is that there were some members who weren't attending retreat, but were very, very supportive. So some were very consistently supportive throughout the week. Some came in now and then for discrete things to do. And my sense is that's how we're gonna have to do it. I mean, many of us who are on, who've been on retreat this week will have to be there to support future retreats. And this is a way, as a community, we will support this essential practice. And again, I will emphasize, retreat is essential. Why? Even though we talk, you know, our practice is engagement in daily life, of course, that's most important, the quality of our life. But I think because the nature of our life is so busy, right, and there's so much going on, it's very hard for us to incorporate the Dharma or the teachings or even the practices, because we're just, you know, practicing in very discrete moments in the midst of this, you know, this many, many things are, you know, pulling us in all directions. So to be able to stop 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days, and just put it all down, and with the support and structure of the teacher, the teaching, et cetera, people can have real, you know, experiential realizations of the meaning of things to some degree. And so I think, you know, more and more Great Cloud and Residential Retreat will be part of our practice, our community of practice, but it needs us. So I want to ask Jacqueline, who I saw did come in several times, just what was your experience? I mean, I don't have to say exactly what you did, but just what was your experience as somebody who was not going to retreat, sort of being part of retreat?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is just that sense of community. And for me, it was even before the retreat, because I came and I got to put the mattress covers on all the mattresses on the Thursday before the retreat. And it was really, really special to know that I was sort of making the bed for the people who got to be here on retreat, and to feel like I'm putting the pillow here for their heads. You know, it was just really, really lovely. So the experience was really joy, and the joy of others to be able to come here and just feel like things I knew were flowing as a river, as we often say, and to be able to just go, ooh, they're letting me in the river, you know. And so I had known that Brian was going to have to be away. Brian's the head of kitchen, and I knew that 2 days he had to be away. And so I had raised my hand to help on those 2 days. So my experience of getting to see how the, you know, the path had been paved, or, you know, the river was carving its way, was to, and wonderfully, we had the experience of one day a pot didn't come from being delivered in the, a dish didn't come in the pot we expected, so this person put the wrong thing on the stove. And Nancy came down and said, yeah, it's all going to be okay. We just have to switch this around. You know, so I got to see how she was really bringing the practice into the kitchen. Likewise, with how Brian and Max were really doing everything so mindfully in the sanitation and the, you know, just the diligence about how we kept it clean and nice for everyone. So seeing how they had sort of set an example for everyone to do these things in the very same way. So it was truly, truly a joy to then see everybody enjoying the wonderful food and then to go off and walk, you know, their path to the next thing. The other thing I got to do, which again, just felt really, really special, was the opportunity to provide two mornings of the meditation that normally go on in here. And so I'd get to tiptoe in and go to the Lotus Hall in the other building and, right, the online meditation. And at that time, I knew that everyone else was here seated for morning meditation. And so, you know, that sense of Sangha and community was just so palpable, because then I knew everybody was already seated in here. And then we who were online were also joining in. So, you know, as I said, it felt like a part of, you know, being, providing something to help other people's experience be wonderful, but also to just kind of benefit by being the one just doing little things.
In the kitchen, and I know she was there, one of the preppers, helping Nancy.
Testing.
Okay. So, I mean, I joined this community to be part of a community and also to have a spiritual practice. So to me, selfless service has always been a key part of that. To feel like you're part of a community, you have to give back. And it's a joyful thing. It's not a sacrifice at all. It's actually, you find a place, there's plenty of things to do here. You find a place that's part of your joy and you give back. So I enjoy cooking and I enjoy being part of that. So to me, it's just part of my practice. And there is, you know, it's not always great, things happen. And that's part of it too, going through it and just dealing, realize you have resistance to certain practices. You got to deal with the sanitation. You got to deal with masking, you know, washing your hands over and over. But that's all part of it. So to me, you know, I consider that my practice.
Are there anybody questions for any of our panelists about? And I guess if you're online, you could just chat it in to Ray Lynn. Any questions anybody has for any of the panelists? Yeah, maybe not. Okay, that's fine. So, I really want to thank our panelists. You can now return to your places. I think I didn't know what they were going to say either. So I was as curious as you are. Again, here we are. We are at, I think I have told people when this whole thing started in my living room back in Naples, Florida, back in the 90s, you know, just offering the Dharma, you know, one day a month in my living room. I mean, I never saw beyond that. and that, you know, the sort of the organic development of this thing just kind of just keeps me growing, keeps me learning, and always, and has forced me to kind of be the kind of leader, visionary, who's also kind of looking ahead, sort of anticipating the movement and going, you know, what's, you know, what would be good next to help this community mature and develop. And so, you know, this great cloud, which means our own capacity to have retreats in our own home, cooking our own food, you know, working for each other, is very different than renting a place or going to a place that has their own staff and their own rules and their own, you know, it's not like that. That's bad, you know what I mean? But it's like, as you know, there's something special about your home. And there's something, and this will be now our home. And hopefully we'll be able to really build retreat. And when I say retreat, I mean, I don't just mean wisdom retreat. I mean retreat at all levels, whether we're on the Dharma path, whether we're on the mindful living path, wherever we are, you know, still to be able to step back from life, right? And give it more attention than 20 minutes or an hour, right? And really, you know, spend a few days or many days really just working it. So it becomes real to us, you know, we develop real experience. I think as lay people, or else I think people get very frustrated because they're, you know, we're learning things, we're reading things, we're practicing things, but it's very hard to, you know, bring it into our daily life, you see. And I think, again, it's really because we don't have enough time to practice, you see. It's like, you know, it's like a musician who doesn't have time to practice and that they're always expected to perform. It's like, no, I need more time to practice, right? You see, and I think that's often the problem for many of us. Our frustration is, you know, we don't have the time to really practice and develop our mindfulness, develop our awareness of our mind, develop, you know, an understanding of these fundamental teachings where we really can reflect on them, at least for a few days consistently. So they really, you see what I'm saying? We get it. So anyhow, those days are over. We now have our own place. So so again, I bow to all the ones who have stuck with me over these last 5 years of giving birth to a great cloud. I know it did cause consternation. What is Fred? What rabbit hole is he taking us down now? You know, we're ever going to get out of this one. I mean, I understand that. But anyhow, luckily it all had a happy ending, so we can be happy, and I hopefully we'll have many more happy endings. So thank you, everyone. And hopefully, again, we were inspired by listening to our brothers and sisters talk about their experience, and hoping everyone listening will have their own experience of Great Cloud in the coming days and years. Now I turn it over to Tim Ham. Us for singing the Metta, the Song of Loving Kindness.
What a wonderful morning. So I understand there are some new people here. So I think we'll do the Metta song in the call response method, which is, if you haven't done it, it's very simple. I sing something, you sing the same thing. And we'll do it together.
May I be happy. I be peaceful and at ease. May I have courage, determination, and understanding for all I need.
And understanding for all I need.
May I be. May you be well.
May you be happy.
May you be peaceful and at ease.
May you be peaceful and at ease.
May you
have courage.
wonderful as usual. And just before announcement, I'm wondering, David, do you think we could open Great Cloud so people can walk through? And remember, there are two doors, one door to the first floor, and then the other door goes to the second floor. You can't get to the second floor from the first floor. Okay, so please, if you have time, if you haven't seen Great Cloud, please go over and walk. I don't know what shape it's in. It's, you know, it could be like the, you know, the night after the party or something. You know. But it's okay. Okay. All right. So David will do that. And if you haven't seen Great Cloud, please go over and walk through.